This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome to the Bring Your Product Ideas to Life podcast. Practical advice and inspiration to help you create and sell your own physical products. Here's your host, Vicky Weinberg.
Hi, today on the podcast, I'm talking to Jenna Farmer. Jenna helps small businesses get visible through amazing blog content and getting featured in the media. So we talked about two topics today, which are, as you might have guessed, blogging, so how to produce good blog content for your products business. I know that when I was selling products, I really struggled with what to talk about other than my products. And if you're in a similar boat, I think you're going to find this really useful. Jenna has some excellent suggestions of the kind of things that you can talk about on your blog to keep your audience engaged. And we also cover things like how often you need to be blogging, which might be good news for your business, less than you might think. And then we also spoke about how to get your business featured in the media. And Jenna had lots and lots of practical tips and advice here, even if you're someone who's a bit shy. I mean, I know that I'm a bit daunted actually by the thought of getting featured in the press somewhere. It just seems like quite a big deal, and even pitching seems quite scary. And I think that the conversation with Jenna will really help you with that. So with all that said, I now would love to introduce you to Jenna, and I really hope you enjoy this conversation. So hi Jenna, thank you so much for being here.
No problem, thanks so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. So can we start with you, please, give an introduction to yourself, your business, and what it is that you do?
Yeah, so I'm Jenna. I'm a journalist and a blogger. And as part of that, I offer services to small businesses who need help with their blog content or also need help getting in the media, reaching out to journalists, beans, magazines, newspapers and blogs.
Amazing, thank you. So if it's okay with you, I'm going to take each topic separately. So let's talk a little bit about blogs first. Let's start off with the real basic question, Jenna, which is why should we be thinking about producing blog content?
Well, I think I talk about sort of two separate things, like blogging and getting seen on the media, but for me, I think they're really closely related. So a lot of people, when they think about starting a blog, just think, you know, I'll just put some content on there, I'll write about what I want to write about. But actually, blogs help in lots of different ways. So firstly, it's about obviously getting seen on Google. So, you know, if you're writing blog content that is popular with Google, that's going to obviously bring more visitors to your site. And then in that blog content, you've obviously got the chance to promote whatever product you're selling. But also within that, Google really likes sites that are updated and provide new and consistent and continuity in their information. So having a blog that's regularly updated is a really great way to show Google that you're not just sort of created a site and left it. So it really helps with things like the algorithm of, you know, Google ranking and getting, you know, seen on Google, which again is really beneficial. But it also helps answer your audience's questions. So, you know, if somebody comes to you and they're not sure about your product or your service or whatever, and you've got a really in-depth blog post that explains it, it actually saves you a lot of time, because you've probably got, you know, audiences asking you questions every day. I know I have, and being able to direct them into a blog post not only means they're on your site, so they might have a little look around, but it's also going to save you repeating the same things over and over again.
Yeah, that's really helpful. So just picking up on one of the things you said about for Google and about keeping your site updated, is there like an optimum number of blog posts you should be publishing, or, you know, should you be updating your site every month? I know there's probably not a black and white answer, but just curious really.
I think, yeah, there isn't a black and white answer. And obviously that algorithm is always changing and we don't know the exact specifics of it. But what I would say is like consistency. So Google also definitely values posts that are quite long and sort of really useful. So I personally think if you've, you know, if it's better to almost have like one post a month that's perhaps like 1,000 words and full of value than perhaps like a 200 word post, which is just pointless because it's not going to be long enough to do anything. So I think as long as you set yourself, you know, a consistency, I mean, ideally, I would say at least once a month, but, you know, once a week is personally what I would aim for. But anywhere between those two parameters, as long as you're consistent, but as long as it's worthwhile content as well, there's no point just putting stuff up for the sake of it. I see a lot of businesses do that, think, okay, I'll just put something up, but there's no point doing it if it's not going to be valuable. So wherever you can find that line of what you can commit to and commit to it, I would say.
Thank you. And it sounds like a good blog post sort of has two purposes then. So it's providing useful information and it's also going to help your SEO as well.
Yes, definitely. And if you think, you know, I'll give you an example at the moment. Like if you've got a product-based business, so I've got a subscription box that I help with their PR and their blog content. Obviously, you know, they're hoping to get found on Google through phrases like subscription box. But then what I did in their case was I wrote a blog post all about corporate gifting and, you know, corporate gifting options, and that managed to rank on Google. So that's something that they wouldn't have ranked for before because it's not really their whole business, if that makes sense. But from that blog post, that ranked on Google and they were able to get sales from it. So there's only so many search combinations or ways that you're going to be found to that static. So it really opens up, you know, the amount of places that people can find you, really.
Thank you. And let's talk a little bit about content as well, if that's okay, because this podcast is obviously for products businesses. I ran my own products business for years, and I'll be honest, blog content was something I really struggled with, because I think I fell into the trap of either just doing posts about my content, about my products. And I think there was, you know, a certain amount of value of that. So for example, one of my products was these bamboo swaddles, and I did lots of posts about, you know, the best ways, 7 ways to use them or whatever, you know, 7 ways you can use them or things like that. Or I would post content that I thought would be relevant to my audience, but in hindsight, probably had nothing to do with my products and probably wasn't also helping, you know, my search rankings and that kind of thing. I think it can be really tricky for products businesses to know what to talk about. So have you got any advice here, please?
Yeah, I mean, what I personally would advise is there's a tool called KeySearch, although there are other ones out there. But basically, you need sort of a keyword planning tool. You can also, if you use Google Ads, there's also like Google AdWords, which is sort of similar. And really, I would just spend half an hour just having to researching keywords or phrases around your topic. So going back to the example I gave you about the subscription box, you know, if I think of a type subscription box in, that's probably going to be too competitive because there's lots of people writing about that. So then it might give me more suggestions. So some of them might not be relevant, but it might give me some suggestions like subscription boxes for your staff and clients, for example, or subscription boxes for healthy eating, for example. So what I would say is using those sorts of keyword tools can be really helpful because it can give you some suggestions, and it's all about finding that topic that's obviously relevant to you, isn't too popular, that means you're not going to get anywhere, but isn't too tiny, that means you're not going to get any traffic. So definitely doing some research, using those research tools, or just if you've, you know, any competitors, having a read of their blogs, seeing the sort of content they're putting out. But yeah, trying to, as another good tip as well, is like awareness days or awareness months. So for example, we've got International Women's Day today, so is that today, I think, yeah,
it is today.
So if there's content around that, or awareness weeks, awareness months, sometimes there's like staff mental health days, if you've got staff offerings. So finding those awareness days can be really useful as well.
Yeah, I guess it's just about finding different angles, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's something that you sort of do get. What I would say as well is that once you've wrote a few posts, you can then start to have a look at your analytics a little bit and see, okay, if one post is doing really well, that tells me that my audience want more of this content. And that's what I always do. Sometimes it's worth, you know, just putting that content out there and seeing what sticks, what's popular, what gets a bit of traffic. And as soon as something gets a bit of traffic, can you replicate that and do it again in a different way to get more traffic? Does that make sense?
That does. Thank you. Yeah. And what about sort of the strategy? Well, I say strategy. It wasn't the strategy I was doing. I didn't really know what I was doing, if I'm honest, Jenna, of sharing content, you know, writing content that might be of use to your audience. I mean, I'm probably answering my own question here, but when I think about it, I suppose I'm thinking that if it's useful then and relevant, then maybe, but if it's too much of a tangent, then maybe not. So for example, we were just talking about Mira, who was on
podcast
recently, and I know that she talks a lot about menopause, but given that a lot of the products that she creates are aimed at helping women eat well during the menopause, I suppose if she was to blog on the subject of menopause, that wouldn't be too much of a jump and would still be relevant.
Yeah, and I think sometimes as well, different blogs have different purpose. So, you know, sometimes it's okay, and I do this all the time, to be like, right, this isn't going to do well on Google. You know, say if Mira, for example, was like, I'm going to write about my experience of going to the doctor and not getting anywhere with menopause. Now, that's not going to be something that people are going to necessarily Google, but it's her personal story. So she might share it on her Instagram and people might click through that way, or she might share it in a newsletter. So it's okay for different blogs to have different purposes. You know, sometimes I'll write things just, you know, I've got Crohn's disease, for example. So sometimes I'll blog about my experiences with that, and people might not be Googling that, but that's got a different purpose. So it's okay for different blogs to have different purposes. But if, say, Mira's, did she talk on the podcast, didn't she, about the new box that she's launching?
So, yes, she did.
Yeah. So let's use that as an example. You know, if Mira's launching this box for kids, then she needs to perhaps get specific and think, okay, are there any articles that are talking about, you know, healthy food boxes for kids, or are there any articles that are talking about, you know, subscription box for kids, or tips for eating healthier with your kids? So that's going to have a whole different purpose. So I think it's absolutely fine to have a mix of different blog topics, but when you're writing it, you should be sort of thinking, okay, how am I helping people, and how are people going to find me from this blog post?
Yeah, I guess it sounds like whatever you write about, it needs to have a purpose, whether that's getting found by search engines or helping people to learn about your products, or in the case you were giving about perhaps Mira, we keep coming back to Mira, I'll have to link to this episode in the show notes, people haven't heard about it. But I suppose if she were to do a blog post about her experience going to the doctors, I guess the benefit of that would be to help people who came onto her site learn a bit more about her, connect to her.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I mean, people buy from people as well, don't they? So I'm sure that you'll know, you know, like sometimes you might write about something that's not necessarily got links to your products in, but they might follow you on Instagram, they might sign up for your newsletter, and then in a month's time they might buy from you. So it's just about knowing how, what you're blogging for when you're blogging, I think, rather than just putting content out there.
Yeah, thank you. So it sounds like as long as you've got a purpose and you know why you're producing a piece of content, that sounds like the key takeaway. Yes. Would that be fair?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, thank you. So let's switch over, if that's okay, and talk a bit about getting featured in the press. So I'm going to ask the same question as I did for blogs, which is why would you want to be in the press? You know, let's say you're very shy and, you know, you don't particularly like putting yourself out there, but let's why should you?
Yeah, well, sort of similar reasons again for the blog content. So obviously, you know, the main one that people always talk about is that it's going to make me sales, it's going to make me more money. If my product gets featured in The Independent or something, that's going to translate into sales. So obviously that's the main one. And yeah, of course, that is going to happen. But it all comes back to, again, you know, visibility being shown out there, you know, people learning your journey, and people might follow you that way. When you're featured in the media as well, often they might link back to your website, and that really helps with what we talked about before with Google, because we know that when you search something, you know, for example, if I'm searching, like, you know, a Chinese takeaway for this evening, the ranking that's going to be at the top is most likely that site that's been around for a while and people have recommended and talked about. So when you're getting those links and those mentions from magazines and newspapers. That really helps as well, because it's sort of showing Google, look, you know, we think this site's amazing, people are linking to it. So even if you don't necessarily have a big jump in sales, you might be surprised at how that affects, you know, other areas of your business. Perhaps more people might read your blog as well, and that's obviously going to translate into sales. And yeah, and finally, it's just a really great way to get visibility. Obviously, to advertise in a magazine or a newspaper can cost thousands and thousands of pounds. So if you can find a story or an angle that gets you featured naturally without paying, then the benefits can be huge.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you. So I guess it is all about just getting more people to see what you're doing, what you sell. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah, I can definitely see the benefits. I'll be honest though, Jenna, it feels like really hard work. Have you got any advice about sort of how to go about getting media coverage? So where you should be looking? Let's start there actually. So where would you find opportunities, or do you create your own opportunities? How does that work?
Yeah, so I divide it into two. So first of all, you can definitely create your own opportunities. So I always advise people just to start reading like your dream publication and just start to figure out, okay, this is the kind of stories they cover, or this person covers a lot of this topic. So, you know, try and figure out where you fit within those publications, because a lot of the time people are like, you know, I want to be featured in Grazia. We'd all like to be featured in Grazia, but does that actually fit with your product or your service? So definitely just spend a bit of time figuring out, you know, where your ideal audience is, and then, you know, just drop in that introductory email and just say, you know, I see that you've covered a lot of this, or I see that you're focusing on this. What I do fits really well with that. And, you know, here's some examples. Or especially if you've got a product-based business, you know, you could target that journalist. Can I send you a copy, or can I send you a box, or whatever you sell? And just make that initial introduction. Or if that even seems too scary, you can go onto Twitter and find them on Twitter, because a lot of journalists are on Twitter, and just follow them and see the kind of things that they're posting and sharing and engaging with them. So that's the first way, just sort of making those connections yourself. The second way is a lot easier, and it's probably better if, you know, you don't have loads of confidence, and that is, you know, finding those opportunities. So there's Facebook groups, and there's paid subscriptions, and there's free subscriptions that send you opportunities, where a journalist is like, hi, I write for this place, I'm looking for people with X, Y, and Z, can you help? So that's much better, because obviously you're sort of eliminating the guesswork, and you know exactly what the journalist is looking for. So there's a Facebook group called Lightbulb, the Entrepreneur Hangout, and that's £5 a month. And there's lots of journalists in there doing exactly what I talked about. There's another newsletter, which is a similar amount a month. I think it's about £5 a month. And that's called Editorial. I might have pronounced that wrong. I'll tell you how to spell it.
Send me over the link if you can. That'd be great. Thank you.
That's a daily newsletter that sends you like updates from about 50 journalists. We're looking at this, this, and this. And then there are other like paid for services that cost a bit more money. They're like called Response Source. So if you've got a food brand, Food for Media. And they do cost a lot of money, but obviously, again, you're finding those opportunities. And then the final way is to sort of outsource that. So obviously you can work with like a PR agency. I offer different one-to-one services. So it just really depends on how much time you've got and how much money you have. It's definitely time consuming. But obviously the benefits, you know, are business changing. So it's just about figuring out how much time you've got, how much money you've got, and finding the solution that works for you.
Yeah, thank you. And is journal requested a thing, Jenna? I remember I used to hear people talking about that. Never tried, but
So just going back to Twitter, if you're following those, you know, if you're following those journalists, you can also search the hashtag journal request on Twitter. Again, you know, you do have to filter through a lot of stuff that isn't relevant to you, but I do it once or twice a day, you know, the morning about 9:30. So those early requests come in, and then, you know, late afternoon, and just scroll through that hashtag. And that can be a good way, again, to find journalists to follow and just sort of see the sort of stories that are being, you know, being put out there. But don't be afraid. You know, you might see something and think, okay, that's me, but it's got nothing to do with my business. But if you're willing to talk about it, still put yourself out there, because you don't know what, you know, where that's going to take you in the future and the relationships that you're going to build. So try not to just be, I want my product to be featured with a review and for me to make money from the sales. Try and be a bit more open-minded if you can.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because presumably if a story was about you personally and it was something you were happy to talk about, there's a chance that your business could be mentioned in the story anyway, or that people might just look you up and see what you do. So I guess it's a case of, if it fits and you're happy to talk about the subject, yeah. Is it just a case of just going and giving it a go?
Yeah, you get that link, hopefully, that I talked about, that's going to help with your blog content and your Google traffic. You're going to get that relationship with the journalist, you know, if you're really helpful to them and you mention, oh, by the way, I do this, then the next time they work, I know that I do that all the time. I think, oh, I'll just go back to that person because I already know them. I already know they're really helpful. I know their email address. So yeah, it really helps build relationships. And like you say, you don't know where people are going to find you. So if you can be open-minded and it's not going to take a huge amount of time, then yeah, definitely.
Oh, amazing. Thank you. And what about when you start contacting? Sorry, I've got so many questions, Jenna. Yeah. What about when you start contacting journalists? Like, is there, whether you're sort of, I don't want to say cold calling, that's probably not the right way of saying it, but whether you're approaching them sort of proactively because you're looking to get a story out there, or whether you're responding to a request, is there any best practice for how to, you know, how to contact them? And do press releases still exist? That was my other question. Do people do press releases still? Do they still have it?
Yes. So press releases can definitely be part of that. So yeah, I definitely recommend, I always just recommend you have one press release. So, you know, a lot of businesses want to update it every time, you know, they win an award or they have a new item, but you don't necessarily need to update it every time. Chances are a lot of press releases, you know, are going to get deleted or not read, but it is a useful sort of crib sheet that you can just scan through and to give the journalist a feel of the business. So what I suggest doing is having a press release written, and in that introductory email, first of all, just sort of explain, you know, who you are and why it's relevant to that publication or what they're working on or their audience, just in a paragraph or so. Then you might say, you know, the full press release is below if you want to take a look. And I always recommend that you copy and paste that, because a lot of the times if you add an attachment, they just don't get opened or they clog up the inbox size. If you just copy and paste your press release as an attachment. Yeah. So you're going to, yeah. So you've got your introduction, you've got your copy and paste of the press release in the body of the email. And then I would always say, finish the email by just being super helpful. So include links of, like, you know, where it's stocked, because a lot of people don't do that. And you've got to then Google if it's stocked in multiple places, you know, might just link to a few or mention a few. If it's like a new product, always make it clear, like, when it's being released, because again, that's something that I often go back and forth on. If you've got a link to like a Dropbox or a WeTransfer of images, link that there, because again, that's saving time. And if you've got, especially if you've got a low cost item, and you have got a sample of it and you feel like, you know, it's something that, you know, is better to be tried, like chocolate, for example, then yeah, offer that, you know, offer that sample as well. So always just finish by being really helpful. Here's what I've got, here's where you can find it, here's how I can help you. And you sort of end the email there. And my last tip in relation to being helpful is, if you're going to send that email, then make sure you then check your emails later that day or tomorrow. You know, don't sort of send that email and then go on holiday for a week, because you might miss that reply. And a lot of the time, journalists are on deadlines.
Perfect. Thank you. And what about the actual press release? What should go into there? Because you mentioned having one press release, because I mean when I think of press releases, years and years ago I used to work in PR, and you'd sort of be churning these out all the time, and there'd always be a new press release about a new service or whatever it was. So what would your sort of ones, I mean, I'm assuming that if something big happened in your business, maybe you'd write a press release, you know, just about that, if there was something worthy of a standalone story. But this standard press release that you would, you know, sort of use on repeat, what would be in that?
Yeah, and I mean, it's worth saying, obviously you can keep updating your press releases. I mean, that's what PR agencies would do, but my advice would be, you know, if you're limited in your time or your budget, so perhaps you're paying someone to write your press releases or you're doing them yourself, it's probably not the best use of your time to keep updating it. You could just send a new picture, you could just tweak that press release slightly. But yeah, in the press release itself, I always advise, you know, trying to keep it onto one page if you can. And sort of a bit similar to the email, really, you just want to sort of succinctly summarize your offering. So in the opening paragraph, you might, you know, the key information, if it's a new product launch or the sort of thing you're offering. If it's a product-based business, I then try and have, you know, images and a few bullet points. If you've got a product range, you know, like mirrors, for example, you know, here's our key hero products or three products that are perfect for this time of the year. And, you know, those bullet points are going to tell me the price, the stockists and what they are. And then towards the bottom of the press release, I always have just a summary again of being helpful. So here's where you can find the images. This is the date they go on sale. Here's the list of the stockists. If you want images or if you want more images, if you want product samples or so-and-so, email this address. So just keep it as helpful as possible. And in that introductory paragraph or throughout, just trying to think about what are the unique selling points to you. So whether it's got an accreditation, if it's vegan, if it's won an award, if it's plastic free, anything that's going to be sort of creating that story that you feel is detailed that the journalist needs to know.
Perfect. Thank you. I was just about to ask about that, actually, because it sounds like a lot of what you need to include is really factual. So I was going to ask about whether you need to include a spin or the USP or some sort of backstory to capture journalists' attention, or is that more what you would do in the email?
Yeah, so in the email itself, you can definitely personalize, you know, that email. So, you know, for example, if I've got a product that's vegan and I'm writing to a vegan magazine, I'm going to really sell about that, talk about it's approved by the society and so on. While if it's just a general food magazine, I might mention it just in passing, if that makes sense. In the press release itself, you can tweak it every time, but I think really it's okay if the press release doesn't perfectly match that email pitch, because you're going to be sending, you're going to be tweaking that email pitch anyway. But anything that makes it different and unique, I would definitely put in the press release, anything that stands it out. And if your business has the backstory that's interesting, you could mention just a few sentences on that. You know, perhaps it started during lockdown, or perhaps you've got twins and you're juggling your business. You can include a little bit of that as well, but just about getting the balance between the useful information, but just keeping it succinct and summarized.
That makes sense. Thank you. Because I guess this isn't something, as you say, most of us won't have the time to be updating this constantly.
Yeah.
So I guess if it's something that's fairly standard, then if you were emailing journalists, for example, then that would be the place where you could kind of give the angle to match whatever they're looking for. Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you. That's what I was getting a bit confused about. So it's not like in the old days, but it's not like, I'm thinking it was years ago now when I worked, years and years ago. So it's not like when, you know, you're constantly writing a press release saying we have a new product, we did this, we won this award. So it's not that. It's about having something standard that contains all the key information. So I guess if you had a new product, you maybe add a new bullet point, for example.
Yes, I mean, that's what I would advise. But the reason I advise that is because I just mainly work with, you know, small businesses who don't have much budget, or perhaps hire me just for one day or that sort of thing. So if you've got a limited budget and time, of course, you can keep updating your press releases. But I just think it'd be better spent having a one size fits all press release and tailoring that initial pitch, because it's in that initial email, that first paragraph, the journalist is going to more likely to decide if it's for them and if to read on anyway, and their press release isn't going to be towards the bottom. So chances are when I read an email, I'll only scan to the press release if it's, you know, worth considering, if it fits with what I'm doing. And really I'm just scanning that press release for just like key points that I can take and use in my article. So you know, I wouldn't overthink that press release too much.
That's really good advice. Thank you. Because, yeah, I mean, this podcast is for small businesses who, you know, I assume most of the time are going to be doing their own PR and aren't going to have a lot of time or money for it. So that's so helpful. Thank you. And it sounds like the key takeaway is that the first couple of lines of the email need to be the thing that get the journalist's attention. Because I assume if you don't grab them
straight away, then chances are they're not even going to read down to your press release.
Yeah, exactly. And they're, I mean, yeah, it's not being rude necessarily. It's just that a lot of journalists get, you know, hundreds and hundreds of emails a day. So it just has to fit with what they're doing, or they just don't have time to carry on reading.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you about that as a journalist. So if you put out a pitch, do you tend to just get hundreds of responses?
Yeah. So I just, yeah, so just scroll through, and you can sort of, I'm quite quick at reading now, but you can sort of get a sense of which one fits. And if it doesn't, then usually I just delete. I will say sometimes I think if it's, you know, you can't do it for everyone, but if it's like the perfect publication, or, you know, it's a journalist you follow for a while, I do think trying to mention that and have a relationship does help a lot. So, you know, for example, I've got a 2-year-old, Jude, and I write about parenting, and I've got my Instagram, and if someone emails me and say like, oh, I love, you know, this vlog you wrote, or I love watching you and Jude, even if it doesn't fit, I'll send a reply back, because I think that was nice, you know, that they took the time to understand a bit more about the work that I'm doing. Or even if it was like, you know, I thought this article that you wrote here was brilliant, I shared it to my friends, or so on. You can't do that with every time, it's got to be genuine, but when people do that, I definitely do reply and keep them in mind. So that could be another thing worth thinking about.
Oh, that's really useful, thank you. And I can definitely see what you're saying there, because I find that I get quite a lot of pitches for people. I have a blog, as we've spoken about, but I get pitches for people who want to write guest articles, and a lot of the time they don't even sort of write my name, they'll just write hi and then give this pitch, and often it doesn't even fit. And I just think, if you can't even be bothered to find out what my name is before you email, then I usually reply to everything, but those sort of emails I have just started deleting, because I just think, if you can't, you know, take the time to find out who I am and what I write about and things like that, then it's just, and the same with the podcast actually as well. I think that, because I also sort of pitch myself as a guest for other people's podcasts, and I do think you have to at least listen to some episodes and
exactly,
and find out a bit about the person.
You know, read the magazine, which you should be anyway. And just if they've never ever covered your topic, that's probably because it's not right for their audience. So don't waste the like your time as well by sending them an email, sort of thing.
Thank you. And is there anything else that you would say like to people to be wary of, or to definitely not do? Because obviously you're in a unique position as a journalist. Is there anything else other than the spammy sort of emails that have probably been sent to hundreds of people? Is there anything else that for you would make it an automatic no?
Well, I think first of all, nothing is guaranteed unless you're paying for it. So I don't mean pay me, but, you know, unless you're paying for advertising, nothing, you know, is guaranteed. So at the same time, you know, if you've got a personal story that you're sharing as part of a case study, then absolutely you can ask for a read back, which means, you know, I just want to check out, you know, I'm being represented properly, or, you know, that my story's being told properly before you hit publish. But if, you know, you're sending me some chocolate and I'm writing about the best vegan chocolate, then you don't have the sort of right or to ask for that read back, because you have to accept the journalist's sort of word. So I think that's worth making that distinction, in terms of realize that, you know, unless you're paying for something, you can't necessarily control what's being written, you can't control the amount of coverage, you can't control what image the journalist used necessarily. The difference being, the exception being, if it's something that's really personal, that you're sharing that story, that you should make sure that you're, you know, getting written fairly. But otherwise, you have to accept that. Similarly, things like things change all the time. So perhaps, you know, you sent over 500 words, but 10 words have been used. Perhaps it's not featured in this newspaper, it's going to be featured in another one. The article might take a new direction. You might spend hours and hours and it just gets cut. And all of that you've just sort of got to accept. And it happens a lot to all of my clients, or to me personally, when I've written something, and you have to accept, again, if you're not paying for something, it's not guaranteed until you see that coverage. So don't get your hopes up too much until it actually goes live. So that would be my last tip, just to be as helpful as possible. So, you know, I've had people email before and I'm like, okay, but when is the project actually going to go live? And they're like, oh, I'm not sure. Well, okay, well, my deadline's next week, so is it going to go live? Now, of course, I know that loads of those things are out of your control. There might be website problems, there might be supply problems. So don't send that email until everything's lined up in place, because otherwise I've had people mess me around before, it's not ready yet, or the images aren't ready yet. I know it can be tempting to email as soon as you can, but you just might annoy that journalist if everything's not in place.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you. And given how much you've said it's about relationships, that obviously isn't, yeah. You don't want to get off on that, but really.
Yeah, exactly. So just, go on, sorry.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, yeah, and just beware, although that you might think there's a lot of time, a lot of, especially online, they might need to publish it today, they might need to publish it tomorrow. So the turnaround time, it's definitely to be aware of. And in general, you know, print publications, you know, like magazines, are about 3 or 4 months ahead. So, you know, in July or August, they're going to be ready for Christmas. So I always say to people, you know, if you wait until October till you've got your Christmas pictures, then it's too late because you're missing out on all of that stuff. But while online, it's sort of the opposite. They might need it today. They might need it within the hour. So as you sort of pitch to more journalists, you sort of learn more about that. But really being accommodating to times and trying to turn around things quickly can be really helpful as well.
That's really good. Thank you for that, because it really helps set expectations. So I guess if you're pitching for an online publication, for example, but you know you're back to back in meetings for the next two days, perhaps don't, or be prepared to shuffle things around to be able to do it.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of the time you might get, that's another one, I mean, you might not receive replies. You might feel like you're hitting against a brick wall, but just one reply, you know, that's perfect can, you know, massively change your business. So the journalist isn't going to expect you to respond 24/7, but perhaps if they email and say, oh, can I ring you tomorrow, I'd make time for that call. There's no point saying, oh, I can't do it till next week. Well, they'll just find somebody else. So if you can be accommodating, that would definitely help.
Yeah, I've had very limited experience with this, but I had one sort of journalist interview, and it was a case of, you know, she sort of emailed and said, can we speak tomorrow?
Yeah.
You know, within this 2 hour window. Yeah, which I wasn't quite prepared for, because I wasn't quite, but I did it actually, although it didn't go live actually. I did it, and I was quite proud of myself for doing it. But then the article went in a different direction, which was disappointing, but I think it was a good experience to do it anyway. And it's actually
the journalists will feel bad for that, and they'll try and keep you in mind for something else maybe. And like you say, it's just all practice, isn't it, as well?
Yeah, because it isn't, it can be a bit uncomfortable, especially when you're speaking to a journalist as opposed to writing something in your own words. And actually, have you got any advice for that? So if someone's, you know, got a call booked with a journalist tomorrow, have you got any advice on how best to approach that, or any tips at all? Because it can be quite daunting, especially if you've never done it before.
I mean, first of all, I would definitely at the end of the call say, oh, you know, I'll put what we've said in an email, or I'll summarize it in an email and send that straight afterwards. Because then obviously you've got a bit more control of it, because it's your word. So definitely if you're not sure about something, if a journalist asks you a question and you're not sure how you want to word that, you don't want to say it, you know, on that phone call, then just say, oh, can I have a think about that? I'll put the answer to you via email. And obviously you've got a bit of time then to make sure it's crafted. And like I said, if it is like a case study and it's a topic that's personal to you, or could be controversial, or could be, then just say, oh, you know, can I have a read back, you know, before it's published, or can you give me a heads up of what's going to be included? So you're prepared for that. So, and you know, you also have to set boundaries as well. So if there's something you don't want to talk about, then just don't talk about it. Okay, you might not get that coverage, but is it worth it, sort of thing. So a lot of the issues that I get is for any of the businesses, they'll want to know, okay, can you share the turnover of the business? Can you share the profit? And not everyone wants to do that. And it's not always as straightforward if you've started it in lockdown, you know, you might not have your set of figures then and things like that. So you've just got to set boundaries of what you can and can't share. And if you can't share, then say either on the email or at the start of the call, you know, I can't give you the financial information, or I can't go into detail on X, Y, and Z. And then it's up to the journalist then to make that call about whether it's worth it or not.
Okay, so it sounds like it's worth, just before you get on the phone, just having to think through, I guess, what are the key things you want to talk about, and what are the things you definitely don't want to talk about, and just making that super clear up front. Because you're right, I suppose you don't want to sort of be on the phone to 20 minutes and the journalist asks you a question and you say, oh, actually, I don't want to tell you that, because they're possibly going to feel, well, that was a wasted interview.
So maybe just give them the heads up at the start of the call, or, you know, or I can't talk about this, can't talk about, or perhaps in the email before, just so they're really clear.
That's really helpful, thank you. Because, I guess we all have to be really respectful of each other's time. And one thing I'm really picking up from this whole conversation is a lot of it is about relationships. And I guess if you can be honest and sort of treat the other person with respect rather than seeing it as them helping you, we'll see you helping them. I think that should get off to a much better start.
Yeah, exactly. And they're used to it as well. Like, you know, journalists are used to those conversations. Of course, they want to get the best story, but they're not, you know, they are used to those conversations. As long as you're honest about what you can and what you can't talk about, then the decision's on them. You know, it's like, I'll give you an example as well as that. I'm a freelance writer. So I wrote a piece for the iPaper last week about blind dates, because I actually met my husband on a blind date. It was completely random. Love is Blind, I think it is, on Netflix. It was just the end of that show. And so the editor wanted someone to write on blind dates. Now, my husband is the complete opposite of me. He doesn't even have social media. He's anti-PR. He's like, don't want anyone to look at me or talk about me. So I had to go to my husband and say, oh, they're going to mention, I'm going to write about our blind date. Are you okay? And a lot of the times, he doesn't want his name there. He's okay with like a picture, but, you know, he doesn't want his details there. So you can navigate that. So during lockdown, he actually lost his job and I was the breadwinner. So I actually wrote for Glamour magazine about that relationship shift. But the editor came back to me and said, I want this from your husband. I want this from your husband. And my husband was like, no, I don't want to talk about this really. So I went back to the editor and said, no, I'm not covering this, but I'll do this. And that was fine. And the article got published. So I've gone through it as well. And I know it can be uncomfortable, but what's worse, you know, the coverage is amazing, but to hurt someone that you love or your own self-esteem or your own emotions, it's not worth putting yourself through that if you're not happy with the piece. There'll be other press coverage.
Thank you. And just the final thing I want to ask you about, Jenna, is that I don't know whether other people have this perception, but I, and it might be because I'm shy, I find the thought of talking to journalists quite daunting, partly because I think I don't have much practice with it, so it feels like quite a big thing. Have you got anything you can say to sort of reassure people? A journalist used to speaking to people who haven't had much, you know, much PR exposure, are very new to it. Is that something that journalists are just used to? Because I feel like I'm not a bad speaker, but, you know, sort of having to speak to a journalist fills me with dread. I feel like I would just forget what I was wanting to say.
Well, no, I mean, that's what they're trained in, isn't it? They're trained in being able to get the story out of case studies, or, you know, that's what they're paid for as well, to get the best story. So definitely wouldn't worry about that. And, you know, I'd say almost all of the conversations that they have with people are not going to be expert speakers. They're not going to be experienced people, especially like if they work in the real life and case studies and those sorts of things. So, yeah, I definitely wouldn't be worried. But, you know, in the worst case scenario, you can just say, you know, can we do this via email in the first instance? Ask if you can send over your answers via email first, and then if they need anything clarifying, you can speak on the phone. And then that phone call is going to be a lot shorter, hopefully. You know, you don't have to necessarily speak on the phone. I don't do a lot of phone calls now, really. A lot of the stuff I do is via email. So don't let that put you off. There might be another way around if you really don't want to speak to them on the phone.
Okay, thank you. I mean, obviously that question was about me, but I'm hoping that will help others as well, because I can't be the only introvert here who's a bit nervous.
I hate phone calls. I don't mind actually talking, but it's not actually picking up the phone, dialing the number, that awkward introduction of what to say. And I really don't like phone calls that much either. So you're definitely not alone in it.
Oh, I like it when I'm on this end of it. Like, I love doing the podcast and talking to people, but put me on the other end, like if I'm a guest on somebody else's podcast, I find that much more daunting for whatever reason. I find that, much scarier actually being on the other side of the microphone. So I've worded that strangely. Okay. Well, thank you so much for everything you've shared today, Jenna. One final question to finish on. And whether we're talking about blogging or getting in the media, what would your number one piece of advice be for anyone listening who needs to get a bit more visibility?
Yeah. I would just say think outside the box, and that can apply to both your blog content and your PR. try to see both of those as not just, you know, it's going to make me X amount of money or it's going to get me X amount of sales. Think of how those work together and how they're going to help your visibility. And if you can take on something that's a bit out of the box, whether that's writing a blog post that's outside the box or being a case study for an article that's not quite linked to your business, do it. Take those opportunities because they can take your business in different directions.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you. And thank you so much for everything that you've shared. So I'm going to link to your website in the show notes so people can get a bit more information about your services and what you offer. And yeah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. No, I'm waving.
I can see you. Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end of this episode. If you enjoyed it, please do leave me a review. That really helps other people to find this podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes, and do tell your friends about it too if you think that they also might enjoy it. You can find me at vickyweinberg.com. There you'll find links to all of my social channels. You'll find lots more information, all of the past podcast episodes, and lots of free resources too. So again, that's vickyweinberg.com. Take care, have a good week, and see you next time. Hi, this is just a little note. So if you've enjoyed this episode, or indeed any of the episodes, and you would like to, I don't know, buy me a coffee or something, you can actually now leave tips. So there's a link to how to do this in the show note. Of course, do not feel obliged to do this. This is a free podcast. This will always be a free podcast. But as I say, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that via the link in the show notes.